This episode is brought to you by Odd Mo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, cider, and wine delivered. Call them today at 503-266-8444.
This episode is also brought to you by the Canby Liquor Store. Father's Day is coming, and they really have everything that your dad really wants. From hand-selected gifts you won't find anywhere else, to small batch bourbons and unique craft beers. Find them in the Fred Meyer Shopping Center. Welcome to the Canby Now podcast.
Your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me? It was not a quiet night by any stretch, but the emergency calls were much lighter than had been anticipated, as Canby observed a 4th of July holiday with no city-sponsored celebration or parade, but with plenty of fireworks. With no Canby Fire-sanctioned fireworks show or other community events, first responders were on duty in higher numbers and on high alert, expecting there to be a huge increase in the numbers of unsanctioned aerial displays throughout the area, and there definitely was that, as booms rattled the urban and rural areas until well into the night. But Canby Fire reported Sunday that there were few serious issues. The largest call was a 400 square foot outbuilding that burned at a residence on North Manzanita Street shortly after 2:30 a.m. Division Chief Matt English told the Canby Now podcast it was fully involved when crews arrived on scene, and a trailer, shed, and common fence on a neighboring property were also damaged in the blaze. Though the cause is still under investigation, it does not appear to have been fireworks related, English said. An accidental cardboard fire that was started by improper disposal of fireworks burned in a dumpster at the Orchards apartment complex on South Pine, he added, damage estimated at $500, but no injuries or other serious issues on a night when emergency officials had feared the worst. When asked by text what he thought when he heard the booms going off all over town Saturday night, he didn't hesitate. Sounded like the 4th of July, smiley face emoji. On the CMP's Facebook page, residents shared videos of dazzling aerial fireworks shows in North and South Canby. Said one resident, Teresa Redford, on Facebook, quote, "Thank you, Canbyites, for a spectacular show. I never imagined being told we had to hunker down and everything is canceled would lead to the best pyrotechnics ever." Such pyrotechnics, which are illegal in Oregon, clearly had been purchased at local fireworks stands, but they all sold out anyway. That included the Canby Music Boosters tent on Highway 99E, whose treasurer Rebecca Wright reported that they were completely out of inventory by mid-afternoon Saturday. Sold out, she said on Facebook. Best year ever. Thank you, Canby. It was also the best weekend ever for a special red, white, and blue themed iteration of the Canby Farmers Market, which reported record attendance on a day that in normal years they wouldn't have been open at all because of the parade route and competition from Canby's Independence Day celebration in nearby Waite Park. "I didn't have a counter yesterday," organizer Alexis Purcell said, explaining why she didn't have an estimate on attendance, "but I know vendors did very well."
Bang!
God bless America!
Cardiac arrest-related emergency calls have increased by 300% in the Canby Fire District in the past 90 days. Division Chief Matt English reported Wednesday night, even as survival rates have plummeted. According to Canby Fire, it's all due to people waiting too long to call 911 out of fear of contracting the novel coronavirus as new cases surge in Canby and across Oregon.
We don't believe that people are calling 911 when they have initial heart issues or chest pain or shortness of breath or something that might lead to a cardiac arrest. We feel that they're waiting because they're concerned about getting COVID, either in an ambulance or in an ER. Prior to COVID, we had a 30% survival rate, and we don't know what the survival rate is currently to give you a percentage on that, but we know that in the last 90 days, we've had one survival, which is way less than we normally have.
Emergency medical responders in Canby continue to follow the most stringent infection prevention protocols to protect themselves and the public. They wear TVEC suits, isolation gowns, P100 respirators, safety glasses, and shields for all calls, not just the ones involving confirmed or suspected COVID-19. They completely decontaminate their apparatus, medical units, and personnel between every single response, the division chief said. And the hospitals and emergency rooms are also following strict protocols to prevent cross-contamination.
We want you to be sure that if you call 911, that you will have the cleanest and safest transport capable. And we will ensure that everything has been decontaminated and ready for you to go. We want to remind everybody, if you're having any chest pain, any shortness of breath, anything that could be cardiac related, please don't wait it out. Please don't become a statistic. Please call us. The early response and early prevention, we have proved statistically is a success. And we just feel like the people that haven't been calling are the ones that have succumbed to the cardiac arrests that are the non-survivors.
On Wednesday night, leaders representing the city, emergency services, faith, and business communities addressed the community to give an update on local response to the COVID-19 pandemic, broadcast live on Facebook from Canby Foursquare Church. It was something that they have done many times in the past few months, but there was one notable change. Everyone, from the senior pastor of Canby Foursquare to the division chief of Canby Fire to the Chamber of Commerce director to the mayor of Canby, was wearing a mask. Here's Mayor Brian Hodson.
I'll say my piece about masks. They are in effect. As you can see, we are all wearing them. They're very stylish. Mine is blue. It's a surgical mask. It is for me to protect you if we engage out and about. Due to my day job, I wear this all day long. And believe you me, I look forward to getting this off when I get in my car and when I get home. So I know that they're not comfortable, but at this stage of the game, one, we should be used to them by now, and two, kind of necessary. Kyle was wearing a beautifully done, stylish cloth face mask that can also work. N95s, which are very popular and very uncomfortable, is also an option. My point being, wear them.
Later, Dr. Sean Stone, the medical director for the Canby, Malala, and Colton Fire Districts, shared more about why masks are so important, namely, the continuing threat posed by the coronavirus pandemic. He began by addressing the claim that the surge in new confirmed cases seen in Canby, Clackamas County, and Oregon altogether in June was merely a function of the increased testing. Dr. Stone, who is also a physician for the emergency department at the Willamette Falls in Oregon City, also sees many of the notable serious local cases of COVID, said that that's simply not the case.
Really here today, I think, primarily to talk about how we need to stay vigilant for COVID in the current climate that we're still facing. Unfortunately, we're seeing a huge uptick in cases across the country, and there's been some myths about that. Some people have been under the impression that the uptick in cases is due to more testing. That's not the reason. We're actually seeing more cases. But unfortunately, we're seeing a big increase in Oregon specifically.
He said Oregon has been lucky during the pandemic so far compared to other regions of the country that have been hit much harder. But that should not lead anyone to let their guard down.
This is, in fact, the worst time for us to let our guard down. We're pretty stretched already in terms of resources in the community. Most of the hospitals are running pretty close to capacity right now in the Portland metro area. In the Tri-County area, most of the hospitals are running on a razor-thin margin of having beds.
The threat of the hospital system becoming overwhelmed is once again at the forefront of concern for public health officials and ER doctors like Stone, with the worry being not only having enough beds to care for and hopefully save the lives of COVID patients, but also other serious or life-threatening emergencies that may occur. Contracting COVID-19 should be a concern not only for the individuals themselves, he said, but for whom they may unknowingly transmit it to while asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic. As Dr. Stone put it, quote, "Protecting yourself is not the only motive here. The more people that get infected, the more likely we are to lose, in a fatal sense of the word, vulnerable members of our community, including the elderly and the chronically ill." COVID-19 has contributed to at least 12 deaths in Canby, 2 residents at Countryside Living and 10 at Marquee Hope Village. "The best ways to fight the coronavirus have not changed," Dr. Stone said. "They are actually the best ways to combat any contagious infection that spreads in the way that this one does. Social isolation, washing your hands frequently, practicing good hygiene, wear a mask in public, and avoid unnecessary outings." "It's frustrating for everyone right now, myself included," Stone said. "I totally understand. There's been an enormous impairment to the quality of life of the average individual because of this pandemic. But we're not out of it yet. We have to stay vigilant. We've got to stay strong, and we've got to continue to protect ourselves and those most valuable by not allowing this virus to spread." The coronavirus pandemic has changed the way that most Americans do just about everything. And that includes fighting wildfires. Columbia Helicopters, a global leader in heavy lift helicopter operations and manufacture, maintenance, repair services based at the Aurora State Airport, has several of its signature tandem rotor Chinook helitankers stationed around the country. Sorry, that was a really fun sentence to say. Either actively fighting wildfires or they're just standing by. The country is currently seeing a surge in wildfire events in U.S. Forest Service, contracted companies like Columbia scrambling to respond while keeping their pilots, mechanics, and other field crews safe from the continuing threat of COVID-19. "It was a great challenge, which we met, to implement the safety measures for the coronavirus per the CDC guidelines," said the Columbia Director of Commercial Operations, Keith Saylor. "We not only had to assure social distancing, but the availability and use of personal protective equipment, along with establishing procedures for sterilizing our helicopters and support equipment." Like many organizations, the company has pivoted to more video conferencing and web presentations for crew training and communications, he added. The company's crews have also been thoroughly trained to take protective measures in hotel rooms and other public places. Saylor explained, quote, "We're using hand sanitizers, especially after coming into contact with high-touch surfaces such as doorknobs and light switches." Saylor said this year's fire season is shaping up to be more active than normal, especially in the Pacific Northwest, where heavy rains have generated a considerable amount of fuel. Columbia has a Chinook helicopter working on the bushfire near Phoenix, Arizona since mid-June, and has other crews positioned in Ely, Minnesota, and Salmon, Idaho, as well as Cortez and Oak Ridge in Colorado.
Phil Fogg Jr., president and CEO of Marquee Companies, which owns and operates 25 assisted living facilities in Oregon, Nevada, and California, is not the type of executive to govern from the boardroom. He grew up in the long-term care industry and cut his teeth in his father's company, Prestige Care, before setting off to manage his own skilled nursing care facility at the age of 26. He said he knew from a very early age that it was work he wanted to spend the rest of his life doing. "I just loved working with the residents," says Fogg, who's in the fourth generation of the family business. "The wisdom that can be gained is incredible, serving a population that is on the latter part of their life journey, and they need our support. been able to rally around the idea that you can help people live the best rest of their lives, no matter where they're at in that journey. On a recent Saturday fog, dressed down in a sweatshirt, light windbreaker jeans, and an N95 respirator, was on site at the facility his company owns in Canby, a combination assisted living and post-acute rehab center, which has seen more confirmed cases of the novel coronavirus than all but one long-term care home in the state of Oregon. Fogg spoke with the Canby Now podcast outside the facility on June 20th during the peak of the outbreak, which has since grown to 112 cases. 33 of the facility's 38 residents have tested positive, and 10 have died, along with 43 staff members. We asked him what it's like to be in charge of a facility experiencing such a severe outbreak of COVID-19.
It's like the worst thing that could ever happen. You maybe don't want to print this, but it's like the thing that if somebody thought of the way they could hurt you the most, that you would do this. This virus has, you know, it's unique because it spreads very rapidly. Mm-hmm. But unlike the Spanish flu, which started off taking young people first, this has taken the elderly and a population of people with weaker immune systems, cardiovascular systems compromised, respiratory systems compromised. And it has been a really, really challenging time period because you do everything you can to keep this virus out of any communities. But once it's there, you got to really fight it.
Most of the infection prevention protocols that are in effect at Marquee and long-term care facilities across the country are the same general practices that have been used for years to combat other contagious diseases that can disproportionately affect vulnerable populations in congregate settings, including the flu and norovirus. What has been different about fighting COVID, Fogg said, and what he believes is one of the main things that has helped them turn the tide in Canby is aggressive, widespread, and repeated testing. Based on lessons learned in the Canby outbreak, Marquee has adopted a testing regimen even stricter than the governor's new guidelines for long-term care facilities, requiring all staff to be tested at least once a week. The company has also engaged a private contractor that has made it possible to get results back much more quickly than through the state lab. The other key to Marquee limiting the spread of the virus once the outbreak had been confirmed, Fogg said, was the heroic diligence of the facility's staff.
The term hero sometimes gets thrown around, sometimes a little bit too generously, but in this environment, our team members have literally been working through having the virus themselves. While many haven't, they could be exposed and being willing to come to work and support our residents during this time is heroic to me. And so, yeah, I think the world of them.
Marquee has been able to address staffing shortages by shifting employees from other facilities within the company, including 16 who agreed to temporarily relocate to a new memory care wing, which had finished construction but had not yet been licensed to open before the pandemic hit. They all committed to 3 weeks here, and they're just staying here, Fogg said. They're supplementing all of our team members here, enabling them to self-quarantine and then come back when they're ready. They've been true heroes as well.
Hey, Frankie, do you ever wonder why some businesses aren't, like, more transparent?
Oh, yeah. Like, some of the old buildings downtown are so dark. Get some more windows, you know?
No. I mean, like, transparent as in being open and honest about their business practices.
Oh.
Yeah, like DirectLink is a good example. They don't have internet data caps or charge extra fees for high usage.
Oh, yeah, which is great with all the internet I've been using since this whole COVID situation started.
They also don't charge infrastructure build fees like some other providers, and they're active in our community, too. Check out their philanthropic efforts at directlink.coop/community.
Did you know that they also hold an annual meeting every year where members can talk directly with the board of directors and upper management?
Talk about transparent. You won't see any other companies being that accessible. DirectLink really is here for us. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop to learn more today.
We'd like to extend our undying gratitude to Can Be Now Plus member Elizabeth Woosley. Thank you so much. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we love, to find out how you can become one of the coolest people in the world. One of our supporters on Patreon, visit canbenowpod.com/plus. The coronavirus pandemic obviously had a devastating negative impact in many ways on our economy and the public health situation and the world and our country and here in our state. But today on the Can Be Conversation, we're going to be talking with one local farm and local business that has been able to very creatively put a positive spin and bring some joy and happiness to folks during a difficult time. We have Justin Tim of Frog Pond Farm in Wilsonville. Hi, Justin.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having us.
Absolutely. Well, we're happy to be, thank you for having us. We're happy to be out here on site at your lovely property. Why don't you tell folks a little bit about Frog Pond Farm and what you've been doing during the pandemic days?
Yeah, so we are a family farm. We've been here in Wilsonville since 1985. Primarily raised llamas in the early days and expanded to other animals, Christmas trees, pumpkin patch in the last couple of years.
Big exporter of frog legs, as I understand.
You know, at least once a year we get a call, somebody looking for frog
really?
Legs, and we have to let them know. Unfortunately,
that's not
we do
where the
not
name comes from.
Supply those. Although we do have a couple ponds on the property where frogs do live.
Right.
But yeah, we've been just, you know, as people say, pivoting along with what's happening here in the world of COVID right now, and adapting as we need to as things move forward.
Yeah. So what have you been doing?
So our latest endeavor has involved a farm safari. Mm-hmm. It started a couple months ago. We were just going to do it for one weekend, see how it went.
Right.
1,200 cars later throughout the course of the weekend. In one weekend, everyone remained in their cars. There was social distancing that was happening.
Right.
But we had a steady line of vehicles coming through our farm from the time we opened till the time we closed.
What? How does that compare to like peak pumpkin patch?
Ooh,
there's got to be a lot more.
It is more. Yeah. The difference with pumpkin patch is we have folks that'll show up at our pumpkin patch and they might be here for 2 or 3 hours.
Right.
You know, enjoying the activities that we have at the farm. Whereas for the drive-through safari, you're looking at anywhere from 20 minutes to 40 minutes, depending upon how long the line is, if there's a much of a wait or not. It's moving people through at a pace, but still getting a lot of eye candy, as we call it, as you drive around and get to see all the different critters.
Right. Well, tell me a little bit about the thinking that went into this, because obviously you got some cool animals, but I mean, it's not necessarily like elephants and giraffes and things like, you know, like they were brought in specifically for people to look at, right?
Well, never
like,
say never is what I've been always been told. This isn't an original idea. Other pumpkin patches in and out of this area have done similar type things, opening up their farm for people to come and enjoy the activities and the views of the farm space. And we just figured, gosh, with how many animals we have here and close family friends that are farmers as well, that we could use some of their animals to incorporate. Why not give the opportunity for people to come out here and see what we have going on? Not knowing what our pumpkin patch and Christmas tree season is going to look like, other than knowing it's going to look different than it has in the past.
Right. And why did it surprise you so much the first weekend?
Well, like with any new endeavor, business adventure, you know, you never, in your mind, it always sounds absolutely amazing. But you never know how people are going to receive it. And 1,200 cars suggested that it was received well. So we were just really excited.
And was the thinking really like giving people something to do as well? I mean, with zoos at the time, with zoos closed, was really pretty much everything closed.
Yeah. With people not having the outlet and being very blessed to have a farm, we've got 40 acres that, you know, other really our day-to-day hadn't changed a lot.
Right.
The income had changed, right. Yes, but the daily chores and the animals all still need to be taken care of, and we're outside moving around. And realizing people who are in, you know, apartments and townhomes and regular neighborhoods just don't have that luxury. And to give them something just different to look at, whether it be a woolly Scottish Highland cow, a llama, a camel, a pig, a turkey, just something that was going to be outside of their norm. And to help entice people a little bit, we had to include some donuts because donuts just make everything a little bit better.
I'd pay $15 just for the donuts, I think. Where did they come from?
So Donut Land in Tualatin is who we've been working with for our donut supplies, and they are absolutely delicious.
Love it. That's awesome to give people something that is not on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
Something that's not Tiger King or
getting
the,
out.
The latest iteration of The Bachelor.
And, you know, what's been entertaining as well is, you know, the families, young and old alike, just absolutely seem to love the animals, and it's really neat to see their interaction with that. The little kids grinning from ear to ear because they get to sit on mom or dad or whoever's lap and put their hands on the steering wheel and mess around in the car without being strapped in. I think that's been as entertaining for the kids as the animals have, to be honest with you.
Tell me more about what the experience is like. So we're here on an off day. You guys are still doing it on the weekends.
Yep.
Here, you know, we're going to walk through and take some pictures that we'll share with listeners through our social media. But it's still in cars?
Yeah, so we ask that people remain in cars. The only time that we say it's fine to get out of your vehicle is at the end of the tour to put your kids back into car seats if they were, you know, if they got out during the time of the safari. It's about a quarter of a mile drive around the property. We've got over 15 different pens of animals that are scattered throughout the drive. And we just ask that people keep their wheels moving. That's the rule. Just try to keep the wheels moving no matter how slow as you're going from one pen to the other. All of our pens and pastures are set up in a way that even if the animals are in the back of their pen or pasture, it's still viewable from the vehicle. And we've got fact sheets that we put out on each of the pens to help educate people about that specific animal. And, you know, make it an educational experience as well. Because for a lot of people,
City slickers, we don't know the difference between a cow and a sheep half the time. So
we have experienced a little bit of that, and we're here to help.
How difficult is it to get the Scottish Highland woolly cows to wear the masks?
Extremely difficult. And
they are so non-compliant.
They do not comply. So we keep the fence between you and the vehicle to help keep that distance.
What have you heard from people about how this has helped brighten maybe a darker, more difficult time?
Yeah, had a lot of really positive responses to folks. And even during the times where it was backed up and people were having to wait a little longer than we were hoping for, is, you know, their responses, they were out of the house. And being able to see an animal, you know, up close and personal, you know, and again, still you're in your vehicle, the animals in the pasture next to what you're driving to, but the animals are able to come right up to the fence and look at you and you look at them. And just giving people that opportunity to experience animals that they would otherwise really never have the chance to interact with as, you know, living in the city. So a lot of really excited people about just a new experience that they've never had before.
And where do you get some of these animals? I understand you have a camel. You've mentioned a Scottish Highland cow, which sounds made up to me, but
Well, and to even add to the Scottish Highland, it's actually a miniature dwarf Scottish Highland cow that we have, as well as our neighbors have a whole herd.
I feel like I'm going to have to Google all this after to make sure you're not pulling my leg.
There's it's a variety pack for sure. A lot
just
of
animals that interested you over the years.
We've always liked the animals that are a little bit out of the norm, a little bit different. Family started raising llamas back in
85,
before they were a common thing. So have a lot of variety with that. The cow, I won't go into all the details, but she came from an auction. And we've had her for 8 years now. The camel came from a friend of ours related to the llamas. They're a distant cousin. miniature woolly spotted donkeys, again, is something that's just a little bit unique. It's not just your regular donkey. It's something that's a bit different.
Yeah.
We've got a 100-pound tortoise that actually came to us because of the safari. Individual had this as a pet for 15 years. It outgrew their home.
Did you say 100-year-old?
15 years.
Oh, okay.
100 pounds.
100
pounds, 15 years old. And they wanted it to come to a place that would be appreciated and could share with people. And so the tortoise came to live with us. So, it's a real menagerie.
How do they get along?
The rule on the farm is everybody has to get along within reason.
Yeah.
The camel is one that we do have to be careful with just because of his sheer size.
Yeah.
Him being playful can hurt even, well, just about any animal we have here on the farm, even the big full-size llamas.
Right.
So he is kept away from them for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Has the lockdown kind of affected the animals at all? I mean, do you notice that they appreciate seeing people? Or I guess maybe this would be a slower season for you guys normally anyway, but.
Yeah, you know, the only thing that's really changed, I would say, for the llama specifically, and llamas being the primary animal on the farm, is we do breed and show llamas, and we haven't been able to show all of the shows across the country have been shut down to date. And so other than that, it's kind of status quo for them.
Yeah.
Same old, same old. They get a few more treats during the drive-through safari when people are chucking apple treats and whatnot to them. But they're loving it.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Let's talk a little bit, just maybe a little more broadly about, you've mentioned and alluded a little bit to kind of the concern of what this winter and fall is going to look like. That would normally be a good time for farms like yourself, that uncertainty. But just from your experience, your personal experience, and maybe folks that you know in this area, what have been some of the big challenges and concerns for folks who raise animals, who do agritourism, that kind of stuff, from the COVID issues?
Yeah, so in the animal world, the biggest challenge we have right now is the outlets for sale and transportation. Okay. There is still transportation happening, but a lot of the animals, most of the animals we have here are what I would consider pet animals. You know, they're not used for end consumption, food purposes. And those are the animals that, you know, they're relatively expensive in comparison to the breed. They're not going for meat, but they're valuable because we show them and we compete across the country and sell across the country. And that has not gone away, but it definitely has some adjustments that have taken place with it. And so for breeders of registered livestock, that has presented a new set of challenges that we're trying to address as best we can, and there's not, you know, we're at the mercy.
There's not so much you can do,
and we're all in the same boat together, and so people are just kind of adjusting as needed. Yes, we didn't breed as many this spring because we don't know what next spring is going to look like. And so just trying to be very cautious of that and aware that it is different. Whatever that different looks like, it is going to be different.
I worry about the farmers, and even maybe even especially those who raise animals, either for food or for what you guys do. But I mean, when the economy tanked, you know, factories could lay folks off, or they could cut back out. Can't lay off a llama, right? Like, you can't just. They still eat just as much. They still cost just as much. I mean, all those costs are still there.
And that's a great point. And part of that, the start of the safari, going back to an earlier question, is the safari was like, okay, all income is
we gotta gone make some right money now. Off these stinking animals.
We don't know what's going to happen. Let's try this. And so, yeah, we're certainly not getting rich off of it, but we are getting our feed bill and vet bills paid for, which is a huge relief as an animal owner to know that that's all being taken care of.
Is it something you think you would continue, or is it just for this moment?
That's a great question. We're listening to our supporters and people who are involved here at the farm, and we're not ruling anything out at this point. The safari has been very successful. It's given a great way for people to get around the farm and get to see different parts of the farm that you otherwise wouldn't be able to, and animals in their more natural setting of the pasture, instead of just being in a pen or in a stall. You know, you're in their turf, you're in their area, and they're sharing that with you. It's a pretty neat thing.
Yeah.
And so as long as people are saying, right, coming out here and supporting it and saying that's what they want, I think that's something we're going to be able to continue to give them.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. It sounds like you have some repeat people that come back more than once.
The rumor has it, the first weekend we opened, we had one family come back three times throughout the course of the weekend.
Yeah,
they were not interested in being at home any longer.
I guess not.
So yeah, we do get
to check the pens at the end of the night and make sure they're not in there.
And we try to keep things interesting and keep things moving. Like this coming weekend, for the first time on the safari, there's going to be some ducklings that are viewable.
Oh, cool.
The tortoise, some brand new Kuni piglets, which is a small, colorful pig. And we went from one baby goat to, I believe we have 7 baby goats now that people are going to be able to see. So, we're trying to keep things fresh for people.
Yeah.
So
no,
whether you've been here before or not, we'll have something. We'll have something.
Love it. How can folks find out more? Or
yeah. So social media, Facebook, yeah. Frog Pond Farms, Oregon, mm-hmm. Is the best place where that's where we're doing our most current up-to-date information. And it links you to all of our different outlets that have all the information that you need to be able to come out here and navigate the fun and wild time to be had.
Yeah, awesome. That's that marketing. Love it. Anything to add? We're almost out of time here.
You know, no, I just really appreciate all the folks that have continued to support our farm and mm-hmm. the endeavors that we're involved in. And we appreciate them continually coming out here and giving us great feedback so that we can continue to improve what we're offering with each event.
So. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for your creativity and hanging in there. We love to have as many of our small and family-owned farms on the other side of this as we can. So,
no, really appreciate you guys doing that. Thank you.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with 3 realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months. Sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
Mm-hmm. How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
All right, everyone, it's my favorite time of the week, Police Beat, and this is going to be from May 26th through June 1st. Starting on May 26th at 3:57 a.m., just getting the week started off real nice, we have an uninsured vehicle that was stopped and the suspended driver was cited for DUI. That's it. That's all that happened on May 26th. We got it out of the way, folks. Everything just in the morning, then we don't have to worry about it. On May 27th at 1:10 a.m., an uninsured vehicle was impounded and the driver was taken home. At 9:55 p.m., a speeding vehicle was stopped and the driver was arrested for DUI alcohol. May 28th at 1:13 p.m., report of identity theft after a victim learned of an unauthorized cellular account had been opened in their name. That's terrifying. I mean, I don't need more cell phones. The one is enough. Honestly, one is too many. We should cut them in half. at 7:30 p.m., an uninsured vehicle with an expired registration was stopped, and the suspended driver was cited. Both heroin and methamphetamine were seized from the vehicle prior to being impounded. Because this wouldn't be Cambie unless you were driving illegally with illegal substances in your vehicle. Something I want to point out is that in this week, we have a ton of uninsured people and unlicensed people, stuff like that. And I don't know if it's going up because of, you know, COVID and all that and the shutdown, but one has to wonder. One also has to wonder with this next story, who do you call when you're being pulled over by the cops and you have no insurance and you're suspended? Because I think that these people did it wrong. On May 29th, in a twisted story that akin to M. Night Shyamalan, at 4:45 p.m., an uninsured vehicle being driven by a suspended driver was impounded. They took the car away. Driver didn't have the car anymore. So, what did that driver do? Driver A calls driver B, their friend, to come pick them up. When the driver's friend arrived to provide him a ride home, officers learned that the second driver was also driving without insurance. Why did you call your friend without insurance? To a cop scene where there are cops who are going to be there? I don't know. But that driver was able to activate an insurance policy at the scene. So, way to go. Technology helps out, right? Go download an app, pay for some insurance, then you can drive off. But was unable to drive his vehicle due to the fact that his license was also suspended. So, they can't help. And when a third person C, so now we have two people who are both suspended and can't drive, third person shows up on foot to move the vehicle that is not allowed to be driven. It is insured, but not driven because the first two people don't have insurance. It was learned that her driving privileges were also suspended. Ultimately, by the grace of God, a licensed and insured driver arrived and moved the vehicle, also providing transportation to the others. I laughed so hard when I first read this story. It was so fun, and it was just what I needed on a day like today. May 30th at 10:49 a.m., report of a hit-and-run damage to a vehicle waiting in a bank drive-up teller lane, also known as parked. A parked car was hit in our town again. At 5:52 p.m., DUI for controlled substance, and at 11:30 p.m., DUI for alcohol. Both of those were arrests. On May 31st at 3:09 p.m., officers were called when a man refused to leave a gas station and he had reportedly been attempting to enter cars that he believed were taxis. The man was arrested on an outstanding warrant. And on June 1st at 9 p.m., report of fraud after a person was scammed by a person posing as computer technical support. Look, if they approach you first, then probably something's not wrong with your computer. Always check it out. And at 9:30 p.m., an uninsured vehicle with an expired registration being driven by a suspended driver was impounded. Because that's what they will do if it's not legal for you to drive your car. Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, just bummed. Miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart, and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby in Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. The Canby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden, so round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.